I'm Chris Sims. I'm the Alberta Director for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and we have a special interview today. Franco Terrazano, of course, is our federal director. He's there in Ottawa. Franco, you wrote a book. Like, you wrote a real book called Axing the Tax, all about the carbon tax. I just finished reading the thing out loud twice. It's really good. But I gotta ask you, the first thing that popped into my mind is, why a book? Don't you write about the carbon tax all the time? Why did you need to write a book about this thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I have two reasons, right? So number one, I think our supporters, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters, ordinary Canadians deserve it, right? Like right now, we're looking at the carbon tax on death's doorstep, right? The fight against the carbon tax is not over, but you've seen support for the carbon tax completely collapse, right? And I think people just need to appreciate how much work they did to do this. Because, like, look, for years, really a decade plus, you had these elite politicians, elite government bureaucrats, especially in Ottawa and other capital cities. You had these taxpayer-funded academics. You even had these big business lobby groups, environmental activists shoving carbon taxes down people's throats. And, you know, it wasn't just a couple years ago when the elite consensus was that carbon taxes are here to stay. You know, sit down, shut up, and pay your carbon tax bill. But ordinary Canadians never stop the fight. And it's ordinary Canadians, especially Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters, who kept pushing back. And it's the reason that support for the carbon tax across Canada has completely collapsed. So it's a real big thank you. It's a bit of a history. And it's just to say, like, hey, folks, take a step back and see what you accomplished. But the second reason that I decided to write this book is because the carbon tax fight is not over, right? What's that old saying, Chris? The king is dead, long live the king, right?
Yes.
Like, you can already start to see the environmental activists, the academics, the carbon tax pushers already trying to reframe what is going on here, where they're going to say, look, the carbon tax was good policy, but Trudeau just bungled the implementation or bungled the communications, right? And they're already working on new ways to relabel, repackage, and hide new carbon taxes on Canadians. So the point of this book is to show that there are serious fatal flaws in the carbon tax. The carbon tax was always bad policy for the ordinary Canadians that the elites forgot about. And that's one of the reasons that I decided to write this book, right? To show Canadians, like, no, it wasn't that Trudeau bungled the policy. There was always fatal flaws in the carbon tax to begin with.
Yeah, carbon taxes don't work. They don't work. And Franco, you make this point repeatedly through this book. I strongly encourage anyone who is interested in this topic, especially when it comes to things like carbon taxes, government control, what governments do when they ignore the people, you'll want to read this book because it is a page turner. What I loved a lot about it. What I liked about it, though, is that you didn't just do the latest play-by-play on the carbon tax. You did a deep dive. Like, all of a sudden, I'm reading about Joe Clark's attempt to put through a big gas tax per gallon. Remember when they used to call it that? You probably don't, but it was
I
all in
don't.
this. You remember, it was all in this book. And there's other elements, too. I don't know where you want to go from there, but there's one that jumped out at me now that I'm the Alberta director that was just galling. And that's when the former NDP Premier of Alberta, Rachel Notley, announced her surprise
Yeah.
provincial carbon tax. She had oil executives standing on stage with her. And you mentioned that there's some like big, you know, some big business people that are responsible for this too. And that's what I love about the book. You don't pull any punches, you name names.
Nah, everyone gets a beating. You know what I mean? I mean, and again, like this was like the carbon tax, one of the reasons that it's been such a big part of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation's target is because it really goes to show like the worst elements of government policy where they leave behind, they forget about the ordinary Canadians who, you know, gotta fuel up their RAM to get to work in the morning, right? And it's really this like collaboration of activists, academics, politicians, bureaucrats, and even in some cases, big businesses who foisted this carbon tax on the people. And, you know, I'm glad you bring up the Alberta example, right? Because one of the fundamental flaws of the carbon tax is that governments that brought in the carbon tax never really got consent from the people, right? They were never honest with the people about the cost of the carbon tax. And in doing so, not only did they never buy support from Canadians, but when they failed to be honest with Canadians about the cost of the carbon tax, they also failed to be honest with themselves about buy-in for the carbon tax. And Rachel Notley's carbon tax in Alberta is a perfect example, where in the 2015 election, I was in Alberta at the time, they had this platform, not a single mention of a carbon tax in the Alberta NDP's platform of 2015. Then they brought it in 2017, right? And then Jason Kenney, he formed the United Conservative Party. He became government. And with Bill 1, scrapped the carbon tax in Alberta. But that's not the only example, right? Let's look to Trudeau and the 2015 election. Well, you know, if you think about the 2015 election and you think about taxes from the 2015 election, Chris, what's the one thing you remember?
That Trudeau won and that he didn't mention, I don't remember him mentioning a carbon tax. I remember him campaigning on making marijuana legal. That's what I mostly remember from 2015.
Well, okay.
Seriously.
Well, and on the tax side, Chris, right, from the 2015 election, if you remember anything about taxes, it was lowering taxes for the middle class and people working hard to join the middle class, right?
That was the tax. He had a whole minister named that. How could I forget?
Right.
You know why? Because it didn't happen. That's why.
Well, that was the whole like big tax policy that the Liberals ran on in 2015 was that middle class tax cut for those in the middle class and those working hard to join it. But, you know, buried 39 pages into the Liberal platform was this vague notion about a price on carbon, right? A vague notion. You had to squint real close to even attempt to realize that they were talking about this massive carbon tax that they would increase every single year from then till eternity, right? So even Trudeau and in 2015, and yes, the carbon tax became his signature tax, but when they ran on it in 2015, they kind of buried it in their campaign. And not only that, right? There was a poll that CBC covered actually just after the carbon tax was implemented in 2019 that showed that yes, Canadians care about the environment, of course, but Canadians couldn't even afford a tax of a monthly Netflix subscription to pay for the environment, right? So even the Liberals, like they looked at the poll showing people wanted a healthy environment and they convinced themselves that people would just go along to get along on a carbon tax. But that was never the case. And it's a fundamental flaw that was built into the carbon tax that so many politicians that ended up hammering Canadians with carbon taxes never truly got consent from the people for these carbon tax plans.
I find it always goes back to the attitude of the government, and that is the government knows best. And we know what's good for you, people, you taxpayers, you drones. And once we achieve power, we'll just implement what we want. What I found really interesting is that, as you point out over and over again, regardless of party, okay, there's progressive conservatives in here, there's even the Conservative Party in here, that doesn't go and consult the people and ask them, hey, do you want to pay $13 extra every time you're filling up your minivan? Do you want to pay $400 extra per winter just for the sin of heating your home? They're not being truthful with the people, and then they're imposing this big tax. And something else that you get into, too, is the shifting goalpost, or the excuses for the carbon tax that you get into at the federal level. Because remember, they first said, oh, this is going to reduce emissions, and then that wasn't working, so they changed. And then they said, oh, this is going to magically put more money back in your pocket. You destroy that in this book. How long did it take you to get right into that, or was it just off the top of your head?
Well, you know, Chris, like we've been fighting the carbon tax for more than a decade at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, right? So like we have been talking about this for years and years and years and years. And our supporters have heard us talk about it. They've been talking about it at the dinner table, social media, you name it, right? So like actually putting the book together, writing and sitting down, it took like a month. But this was like more than a decade of work that the Canadian Taxpayers Federation put in this, right? So look, I mean, and this also is another fundamental flaw law of the carbon tax. And so you'll remember when Trudeau first brought it in, it was all about saving the planet, right? Mm-hmm. We have to do this to save the planet. Now, that's just incorrect. We can get into that in a second. But then you saw Trudeau really change the narrative where the government started to advocate more for the carbon tax as a way to like make you richer,
yeah.
Which was insanity, right? Nobody ever believed it because it's not true, right? Higher prices is a feature of the carbon tax. It's not a bug, right? The carbon tax is there to make gasoline, diesel, natural gas, propane, all these necessary fuels more expensive. And where it really hurts Canadians is that, like, look, these are necessities of life. Like, people don't have an option but to fuel up their car to get to work or take the kids to soccer practice. People don't have an option but to stay warm during the winter. I mean, even the former NDP leader, Jack Layton, had a great quote where it's like, all you're doing is punishing Canadians who need to heat their homes during the winter, right? So look, Trudeau went on this limb claiming that the rebates made people better off. Like, there were so many parliamentary budget officer reports showing that's just incorrect, right? The carbon tax costs hundreds of dollars more than the rebates you get back. But where Trudeau really stepped in it and just proved to everyone that the carbon tax makes life more expensive was on that Atlantic Canada carve out, right? Where they took the carbon tax off of furnace oil for 3 years, and they did that as an affordability measure. Well, it's like, okay, if you're removing the carbon tax from a fuel to make life more affordable, then obviously the carbon tax makes life more expensive.
I'm going to circle back to the Atlantic fiasco, I'll call it that, the Atlantic stepping in it moment in a second. But I really wanted to hammer this home because you do it so eloquently throughout this book. Very clearly, the folks who cheerlead carbon taxes, they want to do this, in their view, to punish you for using oil and gas. So this is the stick part in their brains, okay? They think, oh, we don't want people using oil, gas, natural gas, or propane. Let's make it so bloody expensive that these peasants can't afford it anymore. There's the stick. They're going to punish you financially for doing something they don't want you to do. The problem, of course, is that for the vast majority of normal working people in Canada, there's nowhere for them to go. They can't switch from plastic to paper bags or back and forth. They need to drive to work. They need to heat their home. Farmers need to grow food. There is no abundant, affordable, alternative energy for people to switch to. And so this is where they ran out of runway. Yeah. I remember specifically being on a TV panel with one of the guys in the back rooms that helped write the Liberal carbon tax plan. He had scurried up from Toronto, from Queen's Park, where he was part of the disastrous Ontario Hydro Plan. And then he wrote this and he said, we need to punish the use of fossil fuels. He was being honest because that is what these folks want. But then they ran out of runway because they're like, people aren't switching to something magical because there isn't an option there. They're just taking it in the teeth. They're being kicked in the wallet, and now they can't afford it. What do we do? So then they switch the narrative into this massive tax on everything makes you richer, which was crazy. I mean, I don't have an economics degree, but I'm pretty sure that a huge tax on everything doesn't make people wealthier. I wanted to get back to exactly your point, though, with Atlantic Canada, because that was the sudden uh-oh admission. It was like, I don't know, walking in on somebody who's getting changed. It's like, sorry, whoa, because they suddenly admitted, oh my gosh, this is really costing people a lot of money in Atlantic Canada. It's also going to cost us votes. Let's do something. So that was a really pivotal moment. I think it gets its whole chapter in the book.
It does. But, you know, it's actually, when that happened, I believe it was October 2023, that was actually the end result of a fatal flaw of the carbon tax, right? So that wasn't like, there was already things built into the carbon tax that led to that point. And here's what it was. It was that there was this unequal patchwork of carbon taxes all across Canada, right? So remember, the carbon tax, when Trudeau brought this in 2019, was actually like a mandatory minimum tax where the government sets a carbon tax rate and the provinces, they either have their own carbon tax rate that meets the mandatory minimum or the federal government imposes it. But what happened in 2019 It was there was this patchwork of unfair carbon taxes where essentially the West paid more and the East paid less. And there was a couple of these provinces, but like the Nova Scotia government's own website for a while was bragging that its carbon tax was so low, it was like 1 cent per liter of gasoline, right? So then there was this backlash for all from the CTF, from politicians out West, pushing the government, being like, this is unfair. So the government's like, okay, we got to end this unfair patchwork of carbon taxes, right? So we have three options. Number one.
Just a sec. This is in his book. Guys, you have to read this part. I laughed out loud when I read this part. What are the three options, Franco?
So the three options facing Trudeau and his government was like, okay, number one, scrap the carbon tax. Number two, lower the carbon tax on the Western provinces to where they are in the Eastern provinces. Number three, hammer the Eastern provinces with massive carbon taxes. And you guessed it, the Trudeau government chose the dumbest possible option, which was hammer the Atlantic provinces with these huge carbon tax increases. So on July 1, 2023, the day before, the Nova Scotia carbon tax was like 2 cents a liter of gas. Then overnight, because of the Trudeau government carbon tax hike, gas prices went up like 12 cents per liter of gas extra overnight. The single largest carbon tax increase in Canadian history. And this hammered Atlantic Canadians, right? Higher gas prices, higher driving prices, higher home heating prices, higher grocery prices, as a lot of stuff is delivered by truck, and those truckers need diesel to get the goods to the store, right? So there was massive backlash in the typical liberal stronghold of Atlantic Canada because the Trudeau government did the dumbest possible thing. And then, like, it was just the polls were collapsing. You had liberal MPs, you had liberal provincial politicians speaking out, and that led to the Atlantic Canada carve out, right? Now, the Atlantic Canada carve out proved a couple things. Number one, surprise, surprise, the carbon tax makes life more expensive. Otherwise, why would you remove the carbon tax from heating oil? But number two, it proved just how unfair the carbon tax was, because then the government gave 3% of Canadian families relief while 97% of Canadian families were out in the cold paying the carbon tax. But finally, what it proved was that the carbon tax was always about politics, not saving the planet.
Bingo. Because why, oh, why would they exempt fuel oil, furnace oil, which I'm told, I'm not a chemist, is heavier burning than natural gas. They exempt that oil, that fuel, but not natural gas, not propane. Why is that? Is that because Atlantic Canada, as you point out, is the foundation for liberal votes? This is anecdotal, but I need to share it because it's so funny. I have family out that way. Apparently, they don't follow my work that closely, because all of a sudden, on like July 3rd or something like that, right after the carbon tax hike, I'm not joking, my family member texts me, "Have you heard about this carbon tax thing?"
No, never heard of it.
I think I was literally wearing the t-shirt like at the time when she texted me. So this really bothered average people who don't follow politics really closely. Didn't you, when you did a tour out there, didn't you even overhear people talking about this in the grocery store or something?
Yeah, it was actually crazy, right? Because like me, you, a bunch of our listeners, we're talking about the carbon tax and all the dumb ways government taxes us and spends our money on silly things. But like, on a day-to-day basis, especially when you're outside of Ottawa, you don't really hear people talk too much about politics or taxes, right? Now, we did, just before the Atlantic, that 2023 massive tax hike out there, me and Jay Goldberg, who was our interim Atlantic director at the time, we did a tour where we did media press conferences in all the major markets in Atlantic Canada, being like, hey, folks, this is how much the carbon tax increase is going to cost you. And while we were like going out for dinner, even in grocery stores, even at the airport bar, which I had a couple beers at, you actually heard people talking about this massive tax increase on gasoline, right? So to me, it was just showing how out of touch the government was to be hiking these taxes on the necessities of life. And Atlantic Canadians were taking notice. And mind you, Chris, and a part of this story is that the major tax hikes were also happening at a time where Canada's inflation reached a 40-year high, where there was a pandemic that really had a tale of two Canadas, where people in government were just fine financially, while as people in the private sector sector were taking it on the chin, right? So all of this, the tax fatigue, the pandemic, the inflation crisis, and then you add in these inflationary carbon tax hikes, and it was really the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, because it's an awful lot of money. And what's frustrating is that the governments who impose these things, typically they're making a lot of dough, right? Like a cabinet minister is making close to $300,000 at the time. Yeah. They have a big expense account. They don't feel it. You think they're paying their heat bills in Ottawa and their little apartments we pay for? Like, come on. Like,
yeah, you think the prime minister is paying for his own groceries? Like, come on.
Yeah. We've got the receipts to show he doesn't. So this is the issue where you get out there and you're speaking with people in places like Bridgewater and Truro in Nova Scotia. That extra $10 when they're filling up their pickup truck or whatever, that matters. And then you get into something like furnace oil. You go through that stuff pretty quick. I have experience with furnace oil, and it is expensive. The carbon tax on furnace oil is the same as the carbon tax on diesel. So that adds up real quick. I found it interesting that the revolt came from Atlantic Canada, and it couldn't have come from a stronger place for the Liberals, because within the Liberal caucus, the ones who are from Atlantic Canada are usually the older ones, the ones who've been there longer, who predate former now Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. So quite often, they're the ones that kind of look sideways at the kid in short pants in Ottawa saying, you're doing what now? You're increasing my constituents' tax bill by like $500 this winter? No, you're not. And so that was fascinating that the revolt came from Atlantic Canada. And you point out, the Liberal premier of Newfoundland and Labrador was one of the heaviest hitters against this.
Yeah, he was. I mean, Andrew Fury, and at the time too, right, the only Liberal premier in Canada who was one of the vocal leaders fighting the carbon tax. Now, I will say, like, the revolt within caucus, within the Liberal caucus, really happened in Atlantic Canada.
Yeah.
But I mean, the seeds of the carbon tax revolt were planted years and years ago. And we talk about this, right? But, you know, today it seems like pretty common knowledge that, like, support for the carbon tax is just non-existent, right? You even have the Liberal government saying that they're going to end the carbon tax or pause the carbon tax or set the carbon tax rate to zero on April 1. But, like, if you flash back about a decade ago, there's really only two organizations fighting the carbon tax. One was the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, our supporters, everyone who's watching and listening to this. But the other one was Brad Wall and the Saskatchewan government.
Yep.
Right? And, like, Mr. Wall deserves a ton of credit because he was kind of out on a limb or in the wilderness by himself as a political leader fighting the carbon tax. Because at the time, you know, BC had this carbon tax. Alberta was flirting with the carbon tax. I mean, even relatively close in that time was Ontario and Quebec starting to impose their own carbon taxes. And even the people who in politics were speaking out against carbon taxes were doing so very... Is tepid the right word? I'm not sure, but they weren't over tepid, the top, right? like Pierre Poilievre has been for the last couple of years, right? So if you go back a decade, like, the real only political leader who was like rightly taking it to the carbon tax was Premier of Saskatchewan Brad Wall and his Saskatchewan government.
I loved it when he said he was so outraged when then Scott Moe was the environment minister for the province. And again, folks, I'm only being able to rattle this off back from memory because Franco put all of this in the book. Like, anybody who's into politics, even if carbon taxes aren't your main jam, if you nerd out on Canadian politics, you'll love this book because he goes all the way through this stuff with facts and dates. It's really cool. So Scott Moe at this time was the environment minister. And at the time, he was in some meeting with the environment ministers of different provinces with the federal environment minister, Catherine McKenna. And at that exact time, this is detailed in the book, Trudeau stands up and says, tough cookies, you're all getting it. I'm going to impose the carbon tax no matter what. And Mo left the meeting, rightly so. And so it was really only Saskatchewan for a long time that was speaking up. And Wall said, if I'm recalling correctly, this is basically going to amount to the National Energy Program 2.0. And for folks who aren't from Western Canada, that's when the former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau really put the boots to the West and really wrecked the oil patch. And so he was right when he said this is the National Energy Program 2.0.
So I don't want to give away too much of the book, but I do want to
Sorry,
say, I
I'm
feel
just
like,
reading it from my head.
I do want to say like what I think is interesting about the book and what our people will really enjoy is that I think if you read the book, you're going to have a better understanding of the history of the carbon tax in Canada than like just about anyone else. Like it really goes through over the decades, the ebbs and flows of the carbon tax. Like you kind of feel like you're on a roller coaster ride where there's victories, there's loss, there's victory, there's win, there's loss, you know? But not only does it show the history of the carbon tax, it also shows the fight ahead, because this is an important part of the carbon tax book. Is like I mentioned off the beginning, the king is dead, long live the king, right? No defeat is forever, no victory is everlasting. And I think we have to look at to where we are in this place where ordinary Canadians essentially did the unthinkable a couple months ago, where we forced the Liberal government to backtrack on their own carbon tax, right? They have been capping carbon tax for years. They have been gaslighting Canadians on how good the carbon tax is for years, right? And now we force them to backtrack. But the carbon tax fight is not over, right? So we saw Carney sign that executive order in front of the media, right? Ending the carbon tax rates, or putting it to zero April 1. Of course, the carbon tax law is still on the books. So after the next election, the government could come back and crank the carbon tax up again. But where I think the fight is really heading, Chris, is not a return of the so-called consumer carbon tax, but the fight is going to change to a carbon tax by another name,
Thank
whether they call it an industrial carbon tax, a carbon tax on large emitters, a carbon levy, a save the planet, great tax benefit. I don't know, but I do know that the fight will continue, right? I think it's a good bet that the smart people over there at the David Suzuki Foundation or whatever green group are hatching up new ways to hide the carbon tax and make you pay it and hope you don't notice.
Which brings me to my point of there's so much changing as you're writing this book, and we had to get it to the printers. I will point out, just like the other day, Pierre Poilievre came out directly and said, "No, I'm getting rid of the entire enchilada. No consumer carbon tax, no industrial carbon tax, etc." That does two important things, and it's exactly to your point where you're going here. One, it would save people a lot of money because you're no longer paying the hidden carbon tax, which is still on all your stuff. So, fuel refinery is still obviously passing that carbon tax cost on down to you, standing at the fuel pump. A fertilizer plant is charging the farmer more, which in turn makes our food cost more. But importantly, if you completely get rid of the industrial carbon tax, that takes away the hidey hole, that takes away the ability for the government to hide the consumer carbon tax in this industrial carbon tax in the future. Because exactly to your point, Franco, you do a good job of describing kind of these weird global institutions, groups that are hung up on carbon taxes. They want global carbon taxes. They want carbon tax tariffs. Like, is that where you see the fight going in the future? Is kind of pressure from these international groups?
The fight is twofold. One is internally, and that's like, you know, Carney, who wants to hide the carbon tax, hammer businesses with a hidden carbon tax, and then hopes you won't notice when businesses pass on those costs to you through higher prices, less production in Canada, and fewer Canadian jobs. So that's one part of the next fight, fighting these hidden carbon taxes here at home. But the next part of this fight is fighting these international elites, whether it's in the media, these international media elites, these international academic groups, or these international think tanks, quasi-government organizations, whatever you want to call it. Like, and we detail it in the book where you have the United Nations, the IMF, the World Economic Forum, all these global bigwig bureaucrats coming together and scheming up ways to impose these global carbon taxes on poor middle class, small business owners, citizens of the world. And like we have the receipts here, right? Where these groups are openly talking about why they want to impose global carbon taxes on the citizens, right? And so I do think that not only are we going to have to watch out For internal pressure, like Canadian politicians trying to sneak carbon taxes in on us. But we're also going to have to fight back against the international elite pressure to force carbon taxes on the citizens. And I'll just bring up one thing, because I'm also hearing it in the news a lot, right? You know, now like the liberals are claiming like we have to have a carbon tax on businesses because the European Union might impose carbon tariffs if we don't. Like, okay, number one, folks, think about that logic for a second and how little sense it makes. So you're telling me that our government should impose carbon taxes on all Canadians in the off chance that other countries might impose carbon taxes on some businesses when we sell some of our goods? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Really, you want to hammer all Canadians with carbon taxes because some businesses might pay carbon taxes when they ship goods to other countries? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. But also, number two, if the other countries want to impose carbon tax tariffs on their own citizens, fill your boots.
I was just about to ask that. So let's say that France gets all bent out of joint because we don't have a carbon tax. And they're like, oh, well, you're having, I don't know. I don't even know if they accept wine from the Okanagan. I doubt it. If they did, let's just say for argument's sake, France is allowing wine from British Columbia to come into their country. Wouldn't that just make the tariff be paid by the French person?
Yeah.
Isn't
it's the
that,
same,
that
it's
how
the same
that goes?
Argument. I mean, it's almost the same argument that Trudeau made about Trump's tariffs, right? And you heard Trump or Trudeau say this all the time, that American tariffs are taxes on American businesses and American consumers. Well, use the exact same logic on European Union carbon tariffs. Those are carbon taxes on citizens of Europe. But not only that, like, to the broader point, the vast majority of countries don't have national carbon taxes, which is like the big reason why a carbon tax in Canada will never work, right? The United States, no national carbon taxes. India, Russia, Brazil, major industry countries, big countries, growing economies, none of them have these national carbon taxes. So like, if another country or if Europe wants to impose carbon tax tariffs that will make life more expensive for their own consumers and which will trigger massive trade retaliation with some of the biggest economies in the world, I say, fill your boots, like, you know, give her. Like,
you just imagine, it's like France needs steel. Okay, are you getting it from India or are you getting it from Canada? Which one do you want to get super mad at? Because you're going to have to pick one of them. It's pretty, or the United States, if they're producing it as well. These don't have national carbon taxes. I don't want to give away all of the book, but I really loved the book. I loved also how you pointed out that in the United States, as you point out, there's no national carbon tax. Even though Barack Obama, okay, the Democratic president, didn't even do cap and trade. He was thinking about it, but he didn't go through with it. Then we move ahead. Joe Biden, again, Democratic president, didn't go for it. Kamala Harris didn't campaign on it. So
Clinton,
there's no chance.
Clinton.
You know?
Clinton. She didn't campaign on it. Obviously, Republican presidents of the past never put one in. Trump's never put one in. He's never campaigned on it. I don't think Trump's going to be imposing carbon taxes on Americans anytime soon. And that really just goes back really to the fundamental argument and the diplomatic failure for Trudeau. And that's like, look, a carbon tax in Canada, right? A carbon tax that makes it more expensive for Canadians to fuel up our cars, heat our homes, and buy groceries won't reduce emissions in places like China, India, Russia, or the United States. In fact, all we have to do is look south of the border where there is no carbon tax coming from Washington, D.C. to understand why a carbon tax in Canada is all pain without the environmental gain, right? Like, that's all you have to need to know. In fact, like, the government was wasting hundreds of thousands of dollars on this silly initiative trying to push carbon taxes on the rest of the world. And even in that initiative, the government admitted that, like, well, carbon tax in Canada won't really work unless other countries do it. Well, newsflash, 70% of countries, including many of the largest emitters and the U.S., don't impose national carbon taxes. And that is one of the fundamental flaws of a carbon tax here in Canada, is that it makes the necessities of life more expensive and it doesn't work.
You say it doesn't work, and I just wanted to really nail that home, okay? Because I'm from British Columbia, and you highlight British Columbia, rightly so, as the originator of the carbon tax. British Columbia is gorgeous. It is naturally beautiful. I think it's one of the reasons why the government there has gotten away with their stupid carbon taxes for this long, because people feel like almost it's a guilt sense of living in such a beautiful place. I better pay my sin tax. It doesn't work. Okay, the BC government, when it launched its carbon tax in 2008, it promised that it would reduce emissions by 33% below 2007 levels by the year 2020. What really happened? Emissions went up. They did not go down. They sure as hell did not go down by 33%. It's a failure. And even if, as you point out in the book, even if it was able to reduce emissions somewhat in BC, which it was not, it failed. Say it did, it wouldn't make a dent in global emissions. Canada is responsible for about 1.4% of global emissions. And the Parliamentary Budget Officer has repeatedly pointed this out. It won't make a significant impact in global emissions. So this is one of the frustrating things where they've sold, and I'm trying to be fair, they sold conscientious, environmentally conscientious Canadians a fake bill here. They've said this is going to save the planet. Well, it's not. And they said this is going to make you richer. Well, it didn't. It made you poorer. And you just hammer this message home in this book, Franco.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And look, like there's another issue here too, and it's called carbon leakage, right? This
Right?
is like this wonky term where it essentially says if you have these onerous energy taxes, energy regulations, even if you shut down industries, for example, you might not even be reducing emissions because those businesses, those industries will just move to other jurisdictions, right? And I think you see the best example actually in the Lower Mainland, Chris, where you see media reporting this all the time, where some drivers will just go across to the US to like a border town or border city and fill up there where gas is cheaper. And it's that whole thing, right? Like I remember Christy Clark, when she was not increasing the carbon tax in BC for a little while, she made the case like, why would I increase the carbon tax in BC when the rest of Canada doesn't have it? Businesses are just going to go to the rest of Canada, right? The environmental activists were pushing the federal government to bring in a national carbon tax because of carbon leakage, where they were worried that if only one province had it, it wouldn't reduce emissions because businesses would just go to other provinces. We'll expand that thinking worldwide. If a place like Canada has these onerous carbon taxes and energy regulations, that doesn't mean emissions go down, right? How many emissions are you reducing if we just force businesses out of Canada to go and set up shop in the United States? Emissions aren't going down. We're just losing businesses, jobs, investment, and tax revenue here in Canada. In fact, to go back to these international elites, that's one of the reasons why they keep pushing for global carbon taxes, because they know about carbon leakage, right? They know that if a country like Canada has these onerous taxes and regulations, it doesn't mean emissions will go down. It means businesses and investment will just leave to other jurisdictions.
Exactly. Franco, I think we've covered most of the gamut. Is there anything that I've missed that I haven't asked you that you want to make sure people know about this book, Axing the Tax, The Rise and Fall of the Carbon Tax in Canada? It's going to be coming out soon. Is there
April
anything I
10.
haven't asked you about?
Yeah, so if you want to pick it up, folks, April 10, being published by Sutherland House Publishing, you can get it there. I think the best way to get pre-ordered though is just go on Amazon, right? All you got to do is search Franco Terrazano, Axing the Tax, and you'll find it there. We're also going to include a link in the show notes, so very easy for you guys. And you know, the thing I just want to say is like, thank you to all of our listeners, all of our supporters. There's a lot of people who deserve some of the credit, right? Like, yes, there were some good politicians who were banging the drum against carbon taxes, right? Brad Wall from the very beginning. Pierre Poilievre, the most vocal, biggest opponent against all carbon taxes federally among politicians, right? You had other provincial politicians, even Liberal Premier of Newfoundland and Labrador, you had fury out there. You had conservative premiers in Alberta, Daniel Smith, Jason Kenney, banging away against carbon taxes. Of course, you had the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, me and Chris, banging our heads against the wall for years. But none of us really deserve the credit. The credit goes out to you, like the mass of Canadian Taxpayers Federation, our taxpayer army, thank you so much for just fighting with us. I know the fight is not over and we will not stop fighting until all carbon taxes are gone, but just take a step back, try to appreciate all the hard work that you did. And I just want to say thank you for fighting with us. We're going to keep fighting with you until all the carbon taxes are completely gone.
It's definitely all been made possible because of the Taxpayer Army. Folks, you got to get your hands on this book. Head on over to Amazon. You can pre-order it. There's multiple formats where you can read that book. Make sure that you let your family and friends who are hooked on Canadian politics know, because there's some juice in there.
Oh, yeah.
There's a very tense phone call between our boss and some folks out in Ottawa, when folks might remember the Conservative Party suddenly flirted with a carbon tax for a short period of time. It's pretty juicy. You definitely want to read up on this. So head on over to Amazon.com and get your pre-orders in now. Franco, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Chris.